Hello, seafood friends. You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent, bringing you everything from the boats to the boardrooms, breaking down the news, spilling a little industry fish oil, and sharing the sharp market insights you need to know. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Castiglione.
Lauren, tell everyone where you're recording from.
I am at the Undercurrent home office in London this week.
Woot woot! So what have you been up to over there?
It's been a very productive week. We've had a lot of discussions centered around where Undercurrent is headed over the next 12 to 18 months and how we're continuing to evolve our data and intelligence offerings. We spent a lot of time talking about the growth of our pricing platform, our global trackers, dashboards, which we'll be launching soon, you know, expanding our trade data, AI tools, and how all of those pieces fit together into our subscription offerings. There's been a lot of focus on product strategy, making sure we're prioritizing the things that will create the most value for our subscribers. From my side, personally, there was quite a lot of discussion around the expansion of pricing coverage, which we always get tons of feedback from our contacts and networks, which is awesome. Keep bringing it because we obviously want our subscribers and the industry to drive that. But a lot of the conversations were really encouraging because it feels like the company is gaining momentum and there's a lot of excitement around some of the new data products that we're building. So very long meetings, but, you know, it's always nice to get everybody in the same room and, you know, align on priorities and go out for some really good Indian food in London.
Ah, so jealous. No, I love it. I know that's like the best part about working for Undercurrent is not only working with you, Lauren. No, it's just like that we're constantly just evolving and growing. And yeah, it's really exciting to hear.
Yes, so, all very encouraging.
Yes. Well, we are in for a nice low-key episode after that code red trade alert from last week. We've also got UCN reporter Jacob Resnick joining us to talk about a recent trip he was on reporting from. But first, let's get down to it with some big headlines of the week and start with an update on the snow crab fishery out of Newfoundland and Labrador.
So since when is the Newfoundland snow crab fishery low-key, Amanda?
All right, fair enough. Well, this news is tame compared to some of the other headlines we've covered from them this year. The 17-week season for the world's largest snow crab fishery, which began April 5th, is now past the halfway point, with 8 weeks down and 8 weeks more to go until the season ends on roughly July 31st. UCN's Barb Dean Simmons reported this week that harvesters have landed nearly 31,000 metric tons, or 51% of the quota. That's the latest data from Canada's Department of Fisheries and Oceans, accounting for landings up through Sunday, June 7th. Now, Lorelei Roberts, the executive director of the Association of Seafood Producers, the trade group that represents the majority of Newfoundland and Labrador snow crab processors, told Undercurrent that the pace of landings this season is a little slower than last year. Last year, on about this date, harvesters had landed 60% of the nearly 63,000 metric ton total allowable catch. Now, Roberts said that the slowdown has been due to the stormy weather that Atlantic Canada faced this spring, which she described as brutal.
But the weather ahead is looking good, and you can check out the show notes for a link to Barb's full story. Moving along, let's take a look at China's imported live shellfish market, where prices continue to slide across nearly every major species, from American lobster to king crab, Australian rock lobster, Dungeness crab, and even Vietnamese green lobster. Traders in Shanghai are seeing a broad-based market correction. So let's start with American lobster. Prices are relatively stable compared to the previous week, but that doesn't tell the whole story. The species has been on a steady downward trend since February and is now approaching some of the lowest price levels seen this year. At least one Shanghai-based vendor believes the market may be getting close to a floor. According to the trader, Canadian and U.S. suppliers are actively trying to defend current price levels, limiting the potential for much deeper declines. Even though the recent shipments of Canadian hardshell lobster were good quality, demand has remained too weak for sellers to command a premium. Moving on to king crab, the picture is mixed. Red king crab prices held steady week over week, while blue king crab prices slipped lower. Brown king crab pricing was temporarily unavailable. One bright spot for importers has been product quality. A recent shipment of Russian blue king crab reportedly arrived with excellent vitality and survival rates, allowing traders to keep the crabs in holding tanks for extended periods. Snow crab prices also edged lower and are now hovering near last year's lows. Like American lobster, traders suggest there may not be much room left for further declines. And another segment feeling significant pressure is the rock lobster market. But if you want those details, you'll have to check out the link to the full story in the show notes.
All right. Well, before we go, we've got another UCN friend jumping on as promised. Joining me on the pod this week is Undercurrent reporter Jacob Resnick, who just came back from Vancouver, Washington, where he reported from the North Pacific Fishery Management Council's June meeting, an epic 9-day affair. But you weren't there for all 9 days, right, Jacob?
No, I was not. I was there for the fireworks and I got out.
Okay. And there seems to have been a lot of fireworks and surrounding just one very hot topic there, the pelagic gear standards for Alaska's pollock fleet. So, you know, heading into this meeting, can you kind of give the backstory and kind of set us up?
Sure. I mean, there's two major kind of trawl gears that they use. There's pelagic trawl, which is midwater column. You know, it's above the seafloor where the pollock is. And then there's non-pelagic trawl that actually does contact the bottom and you get like flatfish and rockfish and stuff like that. The gear definition was written back in the 90s. And the industry says that they do every attempt to keep of the pelagic trawl off the seafloor, but you know, the seafloor around in the Gulf of Alaska and the Bering Sea, it's not perfectly flat. You know, there's gullies and things like that. So there is incidental contact. How much contact, that's something that's difficult to quantify. But there's basically these hardline positions that are coming from conservation groups and even some fishing groups that want pelagic trawl to have close to zero contact or be called something else and regulated as such, or redefine what the performance standard would be for pelagic trawl. And basically what it comes down to is the council had to decide how far they were going to, in this long multi-year process, to make a performance standard to say how often, if when, you could have your pelagic gear scrape the seafloor.
And so was it fireworks right from the start of this meeting or what?
No, not really, actually. The fireworks were actually a different trawl issue, which we can talk about too. But this basically, it was, the debate was on how quickly to move forward. And last year, if I recall correctly, the Fishery Management Council was under the same pressure to start crafting some kind of performance standard, which would be enforceable. They revised the standard to basically allow the standard quo fishing to continue, but said that they were open up a discussion paper to get more analysis of how this gear is actually working. And they have some research scientists who are working on this very issue. So at this meeting, they were saying, do we move forward with trying to craft some standards or do we wait for more research to come back? And they ultimately decided that they're going to wait for some more research to come back, I think in February. And the main critics in the commercial sector, which is the crab fleet of pelagic trawl, seem to accept that they are moving towards opening what's called another discussion paper, which will incorporate this newest research, and they can move towards performance standard. There were some advocates in the trawl sector who didn't want to move towards opening a new paper, that they don't want to do any machinations that would move towards an enforceable standard. They lost out. The council is moving this issue forward. We're going to have more next year. But basically in the meeting, the proponents of moving forward said, even if we have a performance standard, it's not going to be zero contact. That hard line is off the table as far as they are concerned. Pelagic trawl gear will continue to have some kind of contact, but they have to figure out a way how to first to quantify it, because the sensor technology that many are advocating, the trawl industry argues that sensor technology doesn't exist yet. So there's a lot to be done to figure out, first, how we have a performance standard, and second, how we would even measure it if it was working. So yeah, it's all very complicated, but it's a multi-billion dollar industries are at stake and a lot of sensitivities here. So it was interesting to see how it play out and report the different arguments and the outcome.
Now, how often does the North Pacific Fishery Management Council meet?
They meet multiple times a year, and it can kind of depend on budget, whether they meet in person or if it's virtual. They kind of bounce around. They mostly meet in Anchorage, but they also sometimes meet in Oregon and Washington State, where some of the fleets are based. They're going to meet again in October and November in Anchorage, but then early next year in there's a February, late February, early March meeting in Anchorage, and that's when we're expected to have more of this discussion paper and revisit this pelagic trawl gear definition issue.
All right, so TBD. Tune back in February for that one.
Yeah, and but also I want to say at that meeting, they're going to bring back the other issue that had the fireworks, and this also involves the trawl fleet, although it's less pelagic trawl and more non-pelagic trawl. And this is in the Gulf of Alaska, where, I mean, literally for more than 2 decades, the crab fleet has been asking for specific protections of these gullies east of Kodiak Island, where the crab are known to molt and mate, and they say it's really kind of like the heart of the fishery. They want the non-pelagic trawl fleet to stop trawling there because of unobserved mortality, they call it, and bycatch, etc. The trawl fleet has resisted this. The processors came out pretty strongly at this meeting saying that they rely on the flatfish there, this arrowtooth flounder and other flatfish. I think in the spring seasons, to kind of when other fisheries are slow, it kind of keeps the processors running and it keeps people employed. And the council and its advisory panel and its scientific and statistical committee really were very sympathetic to that argument, and they were reluctant to order any closures to conserve tanner crab in the Gulf of Alaska. But they did order more study, so it's going to come back. The issue's not going away. I talked to members of the crab fleet who were quite frustrated it's taking, you know, this long. They argue that, you know, something like an arrowtooth flounder, these flatfish, it's a relatively low volume fishery that's being prosecuted right on top of a high value crab fishery. But there's competing economic arguments there, and that's something the council kind of pushed down the road, but is not going to be able to ignore. Of course, trawling is under a lot of scrutiny right now, and the relative sustainability, especially of Alaska pollock. I mean, you know, we've reported it's turned into a very politicized issue in the mainstream arena in the Alaska governor's race that's going on right now. Different gubernatorial hopefuls are jostling on who is more like would crack down on perceived, you know, problems with the Bering Sea trawl fleet with bycatch of salmon and things like that. And it's really important because the Alaska governor forwards 5 of the 11 voting member names to the Secretary of Commerce, so has an outsized influence on the decision makers on this regional council. So, you know, when I talk to people on the sidelines, they seem to say that their council's not trying to make any bold moves ahead of the November election. They kind of want to see how it shakes out because the composition of the council could potentially be very different next year when there's a new governor seated in Juneau.
All right, Jacob, thanks so much for joining us. We've got links back to all the stories that he reported on from the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. All right, that does it for us this week. Lauren, safe travels on your way back.
Thank you so much. And we'll
Thanks.
see you back here next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.